If you're listening to this podcast, you must recognize the value of asking questions. At Aramco, our questions help us engineer a better future. How can today's resources fuel our shared tomorrow? How can we deliver energy to a world that can't stop? How can we deliver one of the fuels of the future? How can we sow curiosity to harvest ingenuity? To learn more about how innovation drives us forward, visit aramco.com/poweredbyhow.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, December 14th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Energy for the future. The U.S. Department of Energy has announced a major breakthrough in nuclear fusion. That's the process that the sun and other stars use to create energy. And being able to reproduce it here on Earth would mean potentially limitless amounts of clean energy. But how close are we to actually powering our world through this type of energy? On today's show, our science reporter Eileen Woodward will talk us through the science behind the big breakthrough and where things go from here. That's after these headlines. More charges against Sam Bankman-Fried. Yesterday, U.S. prosecutors charged the FTX founder with 8 counts of fraud and conspiracy, saying he misappropriated customers' deposits on his crypto exchange and used them to pay the expenses and debts of his crypto hedge fund, Alameda Research. Separately, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission also sued Bankman-Fried for fraud yesterday. In a statement, Bankman-Fried's lawyer, Mark Cohen, said his client is reviewing the charges and considering all his legal options. So, what do the arrest and charges mean for what comes next in the FTX saga? Our reporter, Alexander Ozipovich, covers exchanges and cryptocurrencies, and he joins me now. Hi, Alex. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sam Bankman-Fried was the CEO of FTX. He was the founder of FTX and Alameda Research, but he wasn't the only one who worked there. He wasn't the only one involved with this. So do we expect to see more arrests to come?
So I would not be surprised if there are other criminal charges filed. A scheme that results in people losing $8 billion is hard to pin on one single individual. And we know from our reporting that besides Sam Bankman-Fried, several other executives of Alameda Research and FTX knew about the use of customer funds. If they knew that this was going on and Sam is being charged, then there's a good chance that they'll be charged too.
What does his downfall and now his arrest mean for the crypto industry going forward?
Sam Bankman-Fried's downfall has been a huge blow to crypto. When you have somebody who was seen as the golden boy of the industry who turns out to be a possible fraudster, that does not look good for anyone else. I have heard from my sources that institutions that were considering investing in crypto are sort of pausing those plans or pulling back. There's more fear about the security of your crypto funds if they're sitting on some exchange somewhere because you could lose your money in the same way that FTX customers did.
All right. That's our reporter, Alexander Ozipovich. Thanks so much for joining us, Alex.
Thanks very much for having me, Zoe.
The charges against Bankman-Fried came on the same day as a congressional hearing about the collapse of FTX. FTX's new CEO, John Wray, told lawmakers that the U.S. customers of FTX may not get their money back. His statements contradict some of Bankman-Fried's, who has said funds on FTX's U.S. exchange should be safe. A major privacy deal between the U.S. and Europe has taken a big step forward. The deal, as we've discussed on the show before, would allow Europeans' personal information to be stored legally in the U.S. Without a deal, some U.S. tech companies have said they might shut down their services in Europe. On Tuesday, the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, published a draft approval of the preliminary deal it struck with the U.S. government in March. Past attempts at a deal have gotten overturned in court. And our European tech reporter Sam Schechner said there could be significant debate and pushback against the new one, too.
The essential debate is over whether or not there are sufficient protections to satisfy EU courts against U.S. surveillance of European people. You know, there's a lot of U.S. services that Europeans use. You know, you use Instagram, Facebook, you know, just payroll software in the U.S., where their personal information is stored on servers in the U.S. And the concerns of European policymakers and of the court is that there's not enough safeguards on how American government surveillance units like the NSA can get access to it.
To hear more from Sam, check out this morning's edition of our sister podcast, What's News? Twitter has disbanded its Trust and Safety Council, according to an email viewed by the Wall Street Journal. The council was created before Elon Musk bought the company. It was made up of civil society groups, and it advised Twitter on how to enforce its policies on content like hate speech. Twitter didn't respond to a request for comment. The move, taken on Monday, came as Twitter also reintroduced its paid subscription service, Twitter Blue, which the company hopes will bring it more revenue beyond digital advertising. And in other social media news, Instagram is trying to get its users to be more authentic. Its new Candid Stories feature sends users a daily prompt asking them to snap and share two unfiltered photos using the front and back camera lenses at the same time. Instagram began testing the feature in South Africa on Tuesday and hasn't yet said if it'll roll it out globally. If the feature sounds familiar, that's because it's not unlike Be Real. That app has attracted millions of users over the last few months with a similar strategy of asking users to post unedited pics once a day. This also isn't the first time a platform owned by Meta has adopted features that have become popular on a competing app. Snapchat first had disappearing stories, and TikTok had short videos before the launch of Instagram Reels. All right, coming up, a scientific breakthrough brings us one step closer to nearly limitless clean energy. But how far do researchers still need to go to make it usable? We'll find out after the break.
Think for a moment about your purpose, your why. It could be the thing that drives you, or the people who inspire you, the mark you wish to leave, or the legacy you've already built. At PNC Private Bank, we can help you work towards achieving that purpose for yourself and your loved ones every step of the way. We'll take care of the how. So just tell us, what's your why? To learn more, please visit pnc.com/private bank. Copyright 2022, the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
On Tuesday, the Department of Energy announced a major breakthrough in nuclear fusion. Fusion is the process that powers stars, like the sun. It makes energy by forcing together the centers of two atoms, as opposed to splitting them the way nuclear fission does. That's the kind of energy we get from our current nuclear power plants. Scientists at a U.S. federal research facility say they were able to conduct a controlled fusion reaction here on Earth in a way that, crucially, produced more energy than it consumed. The development brings us one step closer to what's seen as a potential way to create a clean and practically endless source of energy. Joining me to discuss the findings and the possibilities that come from it is our science reporter, Aylin Woodward. Hi, Aylin. It's always great to have you with us.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Can you start by telling us about this experiment? How did it work and what did they find?
So a federal research facility in California has been working on nuclear fusion energy research since it opened its doors in 2009. And there are different facilities and research labs around the world that approach nuclear fusion differently. In this particular case, this lab uses lasers. And what they do is they create conditions that cause hydrogen atoms inside this BB-sized pellet to get super hot and very compressed in a very short amount of time. And that extreme condition is what causes the hydrogen atoms to fuse, and then they release helium and vast amounts of energy at the same time. So that's the fusion energy that they're going for. Other places utilize different methodology where sometimes they'll keep the hydrogen atoms in place using magnets, so they can find them using magnets. But in this particular case, it's lasers.
And why is this development in particular so important?
So for the first time ever in a nuclear fusion controlled reaction, they've gotten more energy out than was put in by the lasers. So this net energy gain really is a first of its kind feat and almost pretty much mission critical for realizing nuclear fusion as a meaningful energy source, electrical energy source.
So it's meaningful in getting us to using nuclear fusion for energy of the future, but how repeatable, I mean, how easy to do was the experiment?
Great question. And, you know, honestly, I think that's a pretty key perspective here is that reproducibility and cheap reproducibility is going to be among the next technological milestones that need to be achieved in order for nuclear fusion to be something that meaningfully powers our electrical grid, right? So right now, this particular facility is able to do a reaction like this not very frequently, and it produced, for instance, only about 3 megajoules of energy. So, you know, that's somewhere around boiling 10 kettles of water, maybe burning 1 log of kindling. So it's not a lot. In order for this to be viable at this particular juncture, you would need this type of reaction to happen something like 10 times per second to give a reasonable electrical power output, one of my experts told me. So right now, really the point is either they have to work on increasing the net energy gain for each time a reaction happens. And in order to do that, they need to increase the efficiency of their lasers. I suppose the other plausible outcome is that the process remains the same, but they figure out how to do it over and over again, repeatedly, very close together for much cheaper than it's happening right now.
So they need to figure out how to do it better or faster. But this isn't the first breakthrough that we've had in fusion development. Can you explain, you know, where we've been up to until now?
Sure. So there are facilities in Europe, and they're basically working on trying to attain the highest nuclear fusion energies ever reported. So they're trying to make more. But they have not yet achieved the net gain that we see here from this U.S. federal lab. Nuclear fusion is very appealing to researchers, to investors, because it has this potential to be a clean and virtually limitless energy source. Nuclear fission, which is that provides about 10% of the world's power right now, you're going to get these long-lived radioactive waste materials that you then have to figure out how to dispose of safely and responsibly. And those aren't a byproduct of nuclear fusion. The only thing you get out of it that you don't need is helium, and helium's an inert gas that doesn't harm anybody. It also doesn't emit any greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide, so you're not getting the same effect as you would with burning fossil fuels, for instance. Nuclear fusion is also more energetically efficient than burning fossil fuels. So that really is, I think, what has sparked so much investment in this particular space.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that investment because, you know, the green energy tech sector is attracting so much money. How much is nuclear fusion in particular attracting, and where is that money coming from?
So more than $5 billion in funding has poured into private fusion firms in recent years. But not all companies are pursuing the same type of design for a fusion reactor. Most of the money actually is going into facilities that are relying on fusion that sort of takes place in a device that is confined by powerful magnets. So it's not the same type of facility as the U.S. lab that just made this announcement. Firms that are pursuing the laser-based approach, I'd say, have raised quite a bit less, so about $180 million.
You mentioned that this laser approach needs to improve its efficiencies before it can really start powering things. So how realistic is fusion in the fight against climate change?
This technology's appeal really is in its potential to provide clean energy. However, we are still very likely years, if not a decade or more, away from realizing commercial nuclear fusion energy. So at a time when the Earth is warming in measurable degrees on a time scale of months to years, it's not going to be a silver bullet at this particular time. However, investment in this space, both by private firms and by governments could very well pay dividends in the future.
All right, that's our reporter, Aylin Woodward. Thanks so much for joining us, Aylin.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Free Expression, a new podcast from The Wall Street Journal with me, Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of The Wall Street Journal. It's a podcast in which we're going to be trying to do something a little different, dig a little deeper into the issues behind the headlines that are in the news all the time. So please join me for my new podcast, Free Expression, with Jerry Baker at The Wall Street Journal. We're very much looking forward to really having some fascinating conversations, and I very much hope you'll join us.